This week's episode of This Is Only a Test is brought to you by Squarespace. Do you have big plans for this new year? Well, Squarespace makes it easy to turn your idea into a unique website. Showcase your work, blog, or publish content, and even sell products and services of all kinds with just a few clicks. You can customize everything from a look and feel to settings and products using beautiful templates created by world-class designers. And there's nothing to install ever. No patching, no upgrades. It just happens automatically and you just sign on and it works. So head over to squarespace.com for a free trial, and when you're ready to launch, use the offer code TEST, just four characters, TST, to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain.
Hey, let's start the show.
For Thursday, January 4th, 2018, welcome to This Is Only a Test, the official podcast of tested.com. Everyone, not only out there, but to those in here as well. How are you guys doing, Jeremy Williams?
I'm well, Norman Chan. Happy New Year to you.
Happy New Year. And Kishore Hari.
Hello. Jeremy, you sound like yourself. First time in a long time.
Was I as sick as late as 2 weeks ago? Okay. Yeah.
I haven't been here for a while.
Yeah. You haven't.
I lost my voice like right before the podcast a couple weeks ago, but Danica filled in admirably.
Absolutely.
Kept you guys in place.
Ooh,
and shut that down.
You were rendered speechless by The Last Jedi.
I decided that if you don't have something good to say, maybe you should keep it to yourself.
Wow. My brother. My man.
Whoa, hater cast.
I'm not as far along on the spectrum as Jeremy. I did go see it a couple times. It got better. I didn't dislike...
It did get better every time.
I didn't dislike what it was trying to do, which is reset the entire Star Wars universe to be open to new ideas. I just felt like it was really long. I thought it was maybe 45 minutes too long for what it was trying to accomplish.
You wanted an under 2 hour movie.
It's not that I wanted an under 2 hour movie. It was that the movie I saw was filled with a lot of stuff that didn't add much to it. Primarily being what happened at the casino, I feel like didn't add anything to the story.
Wow.
I feel like a lot of it was there were elements in the movie that were meant to tie into other parts of the properties, like whether it's cartoons or comics.
Was it?
The whole Phasma thing, it turns out that links into a 4-series comic book that came out. And of course, I don't know anything about
that. Would you rather not have had Phasma? She was barely in the film.
But they overdid it. Like, the part that she was in it was just overdone. It was too dramatic for its own worth.
You're saying underdeveloped.
Yeah, it just didn't earn its presence. The movie itself, and including even Episode 7, did not deserve that whole Phasma sequence. But because of the whole license and all of the other properties.
But she was created for the films, not as a comic book character.
Though it is kind of cool to actually have armor that works. Functional armor for once.
Yeah.
Not a bad thing.
Must be expensive because she's the only one that gets it.
Yeah. Chrome is very expensive. Only for spaceships and leaders of stormtroopers. Yeah. Well, let's not talk about Last Jedi. That's in your past. How'd you guys enjoy your break? Do you do anything fun? Christmas? How'd you celebrate Christmas, family?
My folks came out here. Actually, my parents are still around. They're around for a few more days, but I had an excellent time. Christmas in San Francisco, underrated Christmas town. Lots to do. We went ice skating.
Nobody here.
Everybody leaves.
Yeah. The rapture is fantastic.
Oh, so great. You go to a supermarket and like everyone's, I mean, props to the people who are still working over Christmas break, but it's like half empty.
My folks were in town as well. And we got up, you know, to go driving around at 8, 9 a.m. on a weekday. And we had the roads to ourselves.
Wow.
It was crazy.
Yeah.
I mean, the only places that were crowded were like, not even like shopping mall kind of places. They were like parks.
So what did you guys do? Just drive around the city, go shopping, eat some food?
All of the above. But I went, my favorite thing we did, ice skating at the Embarcadero with my son.
That's a tradition.
Skating outside, nothing beats it. And the fact that we could do it and it was like 50 out instead of what it was like this week on the East Coast, 10 degrees. Heaven. And
this,
it's just
this is
a
not
beautiful
like 30
scene.
Rock. This is just like it's a small skating rink.
You know, it's a decent size rink for an outdoor rink. Like, you know, that one at Rockefeller Center is not as big as you think it is.
On TV, it looks so big.
It's not that big. And so it's pretty close to the same size as that one. The one in Union Square is tiny. But the one in Embarcadero was great. And we went like near sunset. And so you have the view of downtown and the view of Ferry Building, Bay Bridge right there. It was gorgeous.
It's one
of my favorite
to
things.
Recharge our batteries, take the week off. And, well, Jeremy, we had a very special holiday treat.
That's right.
We got to go on a test ride and drive in a Tesla Model 3.
Mm-hmm, just a few days ago.
Yeah.
Still very fresh in our minds.
Wait, who drove?
We both did. The three of us
we
drove.
We?
Jeremy drove, I drove.
And the car
and the car drove.
And the car drove. So that's what I want
to
hear about.
They're shipping the cars right now, and someone who got their cars shipped to them, we got in touch with them and took the car up and down 280, which is our freeway here along south of San Francisco, to a supercharger station. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, what do you want to say about the drive? Was this your first time
in a Tesla? Period.
In a Tesla. Wow.
Yeah. Now you've ridden a Model S.
Uh-huh. I've driven a Model S and an X.
And an X.
Test drives, like not
right.
You know, owned for any or driven for any.
So this was my first Tesla experience and my first autopilot experience. Mm. And starting with autopilot, that is it. I don't think anybody has an experience in autopilot that isn't completely nerve-wracking when the first time they get behind the wheel and they use it.
So you're not just talking about the passenger seat. You're talking about when you're turning it on, whether you're on the freeway.
In the passenger seat, it's kind of like watching TV, where it's like, that's cool, look at what that's doing. But when you're responsible for everybody's lives,
yeah,
and you turn on autopilot, and you're hitting you're coming up to that bend on the highway, and there's cars in every lane, that's when your hands are very close to that wheel, and you're thinking,
well, your hands should be close to
the wheel. This is nerve-wracking.
It should always be on the wheel.
Well, it is definitely futuristic. Like, this car is from the future. That is my one sentence description.
And you're really familiar with electric cars. You've had the Bolt now for about a year, right?
Exactly a year.
And is there anything that was uncanny valley going from the Bolt to this?
I don't know what you mean by that.
I mean, it's a fully electric car. So was it, even though you describe it as a car from the future, it's really not that dramatically different beyond autopilot from what you're in now.
No, it is. It is because of the user experience of it, the user interface. Like, there is, as people who follow this car know, there are no controls. There's no dashboard. There's no display. There's no tactile controls except for this one gigantic screen that's in the center of the dash.
And when we learned that screen, the Teslas have all had screens. The Model S famously had that portrait orientation, I believe a 17-inch screen. This screen looks like it's on a stand propped away from the car.
Yeah, and you don't control the air conditioning flow. You don't open the glove box. With physical controls. You don't open the hood with a physical control. It's all done through this screen. Absolutely everything.
I can't tell if you're saying that in a positive way.
Because
or
it's from
negative.
The future. And I think it's too early for its own good. Because I think as somebody who is driving the car, you want accessible controls so that you don't have to look at that screen while you're doing things.
So it's designed for a driver in the future where you don't necessarily have to have all hands on the wheels at all times.
Fully autonomous, which is to say not just highway, everything. Take me to 7-Eleven and I'm going to check my phone, and that's completely legal because this is a certified self-driving car. That's what this feels like. And it is a firmware update away from that. That's what's awesome.
A patch.
Wait, is voice control there? Like in terms of some of the commands?
Yeah, so it doesn't run like a Siri or Google. They have their own voice control. And there are buttons. Like, it's not completely buttonless. Like, on the steering wheel, they have these two jog dials that are scroll wheels and left and right jog dials where your thumbs would be. So you can control your volume. You can depress it to activate their version of a voice control for maps and such. And, you know, like regulation says, they have to have an emergency blinker button, physical button that you press. It's nicely flush above by the rear view mirror.
The hazard lights.
Hazard lights. But even something like opening the car door, where in every car that I've ridden in since I've grown up has had a lever inside the car door that mimics kind of like the lever on the outside of the car door. Here it's a button. Hmm. It's a button that you press, and then that opens the door. It one of the concerns I had was how do they get to a $35,000 car, right? Because
we should actually say that the car we drove was one of these earlier models, that is the premium model,
right?
It sells for $54,000.
Right. So like the Model S is a Model X. These are $80,000-$100,000 cars. So did Tesla, what did they do, if they did, skimp on anything to get it down to the price? Because yes, it's a smaller car, but you're still talking about a large capacity battery. You're still talking about all the electronics, all these cameras. You know, it doesn't have the things like, it doesn't have the fancy Falcon Wing doors, I think maybe over-engineered Falcon Wing doors of the X. It doesn't have the fancy handle that pops out, of the Model S. In many ways, on the exterior and the way you use it, it's very similar to a car. And I don't know if the removal of buttons and the removal of breakable physical parts is a cost savings measure, or if that just happened to dovetail with designing a car for the future, like Jeremy says, and that's how they save on some of that money.
I wonder if, is there also some other just luxury items, like the seats themselves, all of that?
Seats feel great. Seats, I mean, they're like, your fake leather seats. I think as a company, I don't know if they do leather seats.
It's got, it's got the all the robotics for moving the seat in every direction, as well as the steering wheel, and as well as the mirrors.
So that's an interesting thing. The robotics for moving the steering wheel?
Yeah.
That's on screen.
Mm. Is it?
Using a thumb thing. Yeah, that's a thumb thing.
They have these kind of joysticks on both sides of the steering wheel. But all of those settings, and other cars have done this, but all those settings are stored. So that's great. If you have two people in your family,
makes sense.
Everything goes to its position.
So they're having no dash image that you look through the steering wheel, and they didn't opt for anything like a projected reflected image on the windshield.
Yeah.
One concern I had was, as you're driving, you're looking for data, right? Like speed, you're looking for maps. How challenging is it to glance always to the right? And that screen is not far away from you. Even like I think the Mini Cooper has all of its data in the center and dials. It's how it presents its data, I thought was interesting. You don't have a gauge for fuel because it runs on power, so it's a battery icon. It really is just you get a percentage.
It doesn't
indicator.
Just tell you how many miles you have left.
You can configure it for miles, but the fact that like it can also show, you have 55% battery, like you would look at on a phone, that's different than looking at a dial that says you have F for full and E to empty.
But it makes
sense.
You
have half. But the way you think about batteries is different too, because like anyone who has a smartphone today, a smartphone knows that like 100% to 90% on the phone is typically more than the 10% of use time, and that middle, the middle 30% goes by faster because batteries drain differently.
Well, hopefully Tesla actually engineered their battery, readout to be different than that. I mean, that's a problem with our phones, not a problem.
Oh, it's a problem with these type of lithium ion batteries. What else? Oh, when autopilot was on, so. I guess we can describe how autopilot is turned on. You're driving on the freeway. There are cameras all around the cars. It's using optical cameras. It's not a LiDAR system. It looks at the lines on the road. And when it can see the lines, you get an icon that pops up on the screen, like a steering wheel icon. And that says your autopilot can be enabled. So you have these two levers behind the steering wheel, one for turn signal and windshield wiper, and the other side is for your drive, basically drive reverse neutral, and you double tap the one, the drive one, and then the screen has a blue light that lights around it and says now you're in autopilot mode. And when you're in autopilot mode, it's basically cruise control, so it will adaptive cruise control, which means that it'll stay at a lock speed, your target speed, with awareness of cars in front of you to slow down. And
we didn't experience this, but it does stop and go bumper to bumper highway, traffic.
Right, which does,
is more impressive in a lot of ways.
Does adaptive cruise control do that? Like
the full autopilot does.
Do cars who don't have full autopilot that just have adaptive cruise control?
Not all of them. No. I think they have a minimum of 30 miles an hour or something.
Got it. And if they go slower than that, then you have to press the accelerator.
But some do. I think like the i3 in Europe does that, but maybe not here.
Right, and you can configure you want to always maintain four car lengths difference or three car lengths space between your car and the car in front of you. But even with that adaptive cruise control, the user experience for changing speed, changing your target miles per hour, is different than most cars where you would flip the lever up and down for your cruise control speed. Here, you're pressing a plus button and a minus button on the screen. So it's like flying a spaceship. You're like plus, 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 plus to 75 miles per hour.
It's very much like bridge crew. Like you're being at the helm.
Yeah. You are the helm. The passenger seats, whoever's sitting in the back of the seat should be the captain. And just telling you, you know, helmsman to 85, but sir, speed limit is 65 miles per hour. Turn off adaptive cruise control.
Totally.
This is why I was wondering about voice, because it seems like that's a, first of all, it's a technology that has been pretty well polished at this point. That would be a natural interface in a car like this. Then you wouldn't have to turn to the screen all the time. I'm not saying it eliminates the screen. It eliminates you having to glance over all the time.
I mean, and yes, flipping the lever up and down, it's not exactly an analog control, but it feels more analog, you know, closer to depressing the accelerator than pressing a button on a flat screen. So here it's very digital. Everything is like, it distances you from the driving experience if you want the autopilot on. And then you had something interesting, Jeremy. When you were driving, you tried veering intentionally off the guided lines.
Well, with permission.
With permission, yes. Yeah.
Oh, you tried to hit a car.
No. I just wanted to see what it did. And it does this fake rumble. Like, the steering wheel is so loaded.
Like force feedback in the...
On the steering wheel. The steering wheel is so loaded with sensors and control abilities for it to drive itself that it can do anything. And so one way that they use that is when you start to go out of the road, it rumbles, and it felt 100% like I was actually driving over rumble boards or, you know, rumble bumbles, whatever they are.
It was a sensitive force feedback steering wheel video game like.
It was very much like San Francisco Rush.
And you can punch that car pretty fast.
Yeah, and it looks damn fine. The car looks so good.
How was the acceleration, first of all? Did you guys, did it, this one have like the ludicrous speed?
No, I think that's like a, I don't know if that's come standard with this.
But I don't think it's out yet for the 3.
Yeah, so, but you know, it goes from that 0 to 60 very quickly. It's a bigger car than I thought it would be.
Yeah, it's almost as long as the S.
Yeah, I think it's
really?
Like...
Really? I thought that was going to be a big savings. It was going to be smaller.
It looks sportier.
Yeah, I like the look of it. It's just like the same height as this. So we went to a supercharger south of San Francisco, and there were Model X's and Model S's parked next to it, so we could like do a side-by-side comparison. And yes, it looks, the ID is different than the S, but it's not that much different in terms of its shape and size. I think you have a little bit less trunk space. The passenger seat, we all got turns to sit in the back seat. It's like the S, there's no train down the center, so it's flush. And the clear glass.
Oh my God.
Yeah. Was like, it's something you don't even notice when you're in the front seats, either the front seats, but if you're in the passenger seat, this is a revelation. The rear glass is this giant panoramic glass, one sheet.
It feels like it would be a hatchback where it's just like all window back there, but it's not a hatchback. But the window goes over your head to this right above the front seats where there's a pillar over there. So the back seat is just like you can look up and see sky.
That's amazing.
Through tinted glass. Yeah. I mean, it's really, really beautiful.
Yeah.
I'm most curious now to see the standard model, the one that is $35,000.
Right,
because I don't think it's going to have as many accoutrements, and I want to. But they're going to have enough styling so that it's still Tesla.
I don't think any of us were under the impression that it was actually a $35,000 car.
Well, that's also before tax breaks too.
Well, but
yeah, it is before tax breaks. But there will be a $35,000. It won't have this range. It won't have this many options.
But all the stuff that you're going to want with this car, you're going to upgrade. Like, you're not going to get autopilot at $35,000.
Right. That's a big fee.
Yeah.
Autopilot's a big fee. The big battery, I think the big battery is kind of like, I feel like if it's your first electric car, it's kind of essential for just peace of mind.
Well, I don't know. I mean, because the standard has my battery. So, of course, I feel like
you can do it's enough.
But I have gone to Santa Cruz and back on one charge. You know, it's enough. It's compared to every other electric car out there.
And that's your only car right now.
The Leaf, the BMW, like twice anything else.
Hmm. 300 miles feels like a groundbreaking thing.
So did 200. So I think that that's okay. It is probably $10,000 difference between the first and second battery.
I don't know the exact
price. It's like $9,000 or $10,000.
It's expensive.
It's considerable.
Yeah.
But, as it should be. That is probably one of the more expensive pieces of the car.
And I'm living without access to the supercharger network. Once you have that...
Once you're in San Francisco.
I mean, the supercharger network nationwide is far and away the best charging network, not to mention the fastest.
Something that was funny to me is that, and you might already be in this group, is that when we were in that supercharger network and people were chatting with, like, a lot of the owners, because you're there for 15 to 30 minutes... getting your supercharge, or if you're not getting a coffee or walking through the mall or something, and people are looking at each other's cars and are chatting with each other, they're talking about, it's like talking about gas prices.
Right.
I'm getting it's like 20 cents, like 27 cents at home. Big difference. Like they're already, the lexicon of what they're talking about in terms of the cost of energy is already like a different world. It's like foreign language to me, where I could go and say, I'm getting $3 a gallon. Right, and I don't know what the equivalent of that is in the electric car world, but that's going to fast become normal.
So, most important question, Norm, you have a reservation.
I do have a reservation.
Are you keeping it?
I have no reservations about the reservation.
Yeah, you're more. You sound more excited.
It can't come soon enough. If it was available to me in next month, I would be configuring it, even if that meant that I had to. Because it makes sense, for them to make the more premium models or the mm-hmm. the higher cost models, because the tax breaks, there's only so many of the tax breaks, right? The state tax break in California and the federal tax break, it's only for, I believe, 200,000, the first 200,000 of a certain car model sold.
Isn't it manufacture all cars?
Really?
I thought so.
So hasn't Tesla already manufactured that many cars?
I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong about that.
I want to get in on the tax break. If that tax break can mean that I can get the car earlier and also kind of subsidize some of the accoutrements, then I will definitely jump on.
When do you think you'll get your car?
I don't know.
I mean, I know it's just a best guess.
Fingers for 2018.
You think 2018
on my birthday?
You think?
I think 2018 because you ordered pretty early.
Well, I think we both of us ordered on the same. You ordered earlier than me, but the same day that they announced it. And people were talking about waiting. We heard all the reports of people waiting in line outside of Tesla stores. And
I'll bet not everybody wants the premium model in front of you in line.
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So we'll wait to see.
There's not only the standard model coming later this year, but also even better models. There'll be the all-wheel drive model.
Right.
So there's, you can spend even more than $54,000 if you want.
I can't wait for the new model to come out. I'll go get a used Tesla.
Which one?
I don't know.
Those cars are expensive. You look at used Teslas.
Like, I just think it's funny that I'm even talking about a used Tesla.
I know. This is kind of... it's an
refurb
exciting technology.
Tesla.
It's a very exciting technology.
That's how it's going to be. Refurb Teslas. They're going to be refurb Teslas.
Do you believe... Let's say... The fear right now I have for the Tesla is the Model 3 specifically is that to get to full autonomous mode, mm-hmm. The dream of being able to never have to park your car again, to get out of a car at the mall and say loiter mode or Uber mode or whatever, right? And
my dream is to never have to have my kids get a driver's license.
And they get into the backseat of a car and the car drives them where they need to go and they get out. Now,
we are so far away from that.
Right. My fear is that that is coming sooner than we think, and that the technology here in these cars are selling this year don't have that technology. There will be yet another upgrade.
You mean that they'll...
Obsolescence.
You mean that they've made a mistake and they don't have enough hardware in order to
accomplish that.
Right,
that LiDAR is the only way you can do that. Right. And they've gone with computer vision, and the car that I have is in this limbo middle ground that can do the freeway autopilot, but it can't do the full level 5 city streets.
I think you'd be lucky if it's just one generation. It's probably two from what you're talking about.
Right, so I can live with two generations.
But I think the harder part is that
that is
legal,
not what they've said.
I know that's not what they've said, and I know nothing about this. So, I could be way off base. But it's just like if you're mapping Tesla's development to, other consumer electronic, developments, that's pretty close to what the cycle would be before we get what we want.
I know we've talked about this a lot. Oh, are you not done?
No, I was just going to say really quickly, I think the legal system's not going to catch up for a decade to what you want. So even if the technology's there, I don't think you'll be able to do what you want because you just won't be allowed.
We talked real briefly about this this weekend because after we did this, I saw you and you were comparing it to your experience in the time machine.
In the DeLorean. Yeah.
And you were saying that because that was doing cloverleafs mm-hmm. on its own autonomously, mm-hmm. and you were more impressed with that than you were with Autopilot, which you've also seen.
Yes.
I completely disagree on this. I think that cloverleafs are what computers do really well. They do patterns without dealing with obstacles and unknown variables extremely well. And that makes sense to me. And the robotics to make it do a cloverleaf might be more intense than a Tesla is able to do. But the intelligence is not. The intelligence to do full autopilot, I think, is astronomically more difficult. Do you not disagree?
No, I don't disagree with
that. Okay.
I would agree,
but also say to not underestimate the difficulty of doing cloverleaf, because while there are fewer categories of variables, the variables at those speeds are more volatile.
Yeah, I mean, I would put it this way. Right now, the autopilot you're in, we're able to look at the lines on the road.
Mm-hmm. And other cars. And pedestrians, yeah. I imagine.
But I think what we're talking about with that cloverleaf design, like the idea behind that is it'll be able to recognize a deer as a deer,
yeah,
and make a execute a maneuver that takes into account the other cars on the road.
Yeah,
I think that's a level of intelligence beyond where we're at now.
Yes. Mm.
All right, there goes our Tesla Model 3 recap at the top of the show. Before we get into pop culture news, any presents, good present stories? Anything great things that you got or gave?
I got Mario Galaxy.
What a disappointment.
No, that was the good one. I'm enjoying the new Mario game.
Mario Odyssey.
Goodness,
thankfully.
It isn't living up to like the great Mario games for me so far. I think it was because I got to it late after the hype. But I'm going to keep playing it.
Got to ride that hype.
It's all good.
A lesson in riding hype.
My kid's a sports fan, so we went to a lot of sports ball games, including a Warriors game that was amazing.
Oh, fantastic.
Yeah, not so bad.
Was there fire?
There was fire.
That's awesome.
Awesome.
Hey, on Still Untitled this week, you guys talked about a lot of the great movies that have come out this season, most of which I still haven't had a chance to see, but you omitted one of the bad movies that came out this season that we have yet to talk about amongst the three of us.
I don't think
that we're all excited about, I think, for the most part, which is Bright.
Right. I was excited about this. Let the record show on previous episodes of This Is Only a Test that I was excited about it. And then the movie came out, and it turns out having the movie technically be all complimentary because it's built, I'm paying for it, but it's built into the Netflix account and I could have turned it on at any time. Even it's 4K Dolby Vision, the reviews turned me away from it.
Me too.
Really? Yeah. You have the fancy television. You're probably putting anything on that thing.
I was, yes. Yeah, yeah. The reviews turned, I wish it was reviewed better. I wish it was a better film, I guess.
Wait, have you watched it?
I have not.
Okay. Oh,
I bet it looks good. Really? I bet it does look good.
Have you watched it, Jeremy?
No.
What?
No, the reviews are horrible.
Yeah, the reviews turned me away from it.
Like, I totally watched it. It's not as bad as the reviews say.
Okay, good.
Because I was like, I heard all the reviews, and I'm like, this is going to be awful, and I just watched it late at night. It's not that bad. It's not as bad as the reviews say. It's bad.
I mean, that's the conundrum of this Netflix deal, right? Like, the benefit is if a movie's good and it's built into your service— like, if any piece of content's good, whether it's Daredevil or a new comedy special or something, if it's highly anticipated, like the Jerry Seinfeld special, and it's good, and Netflix has it, that makes Netflix stock in my head rise significantly. Oh, my God, amazing content they're paying so much millions of dollars for. But if it's mediocre, and I'm not saying if it's bad, if it's mediocre, then I'm like, I can watch it anytime. There's no real need. There's no hype train to ride. There's no real water cooler. Sorry, people who watch it out there.
I think the mistake Netflix made, and with most Netflix stuff, Stranger Things excepted, there isn't a lot of hype train. They don't do a lot of pre-show hype.
Well, they let once the hype naturally grow.
Yeah, and then once the show happens, they'll put out a bunch of stuff. But it's usually just like a trailer, here's when it's dropping. Bright had a ton of press ahead of it, Will Smith out on all of the talk shows kind of thing. I think that was a detriment here.
Uh-huh.
Still,
the fact that they promoted it like a big budget
like a
film.
Movie, still 11 million people, according to Nielsen, watched it in the first 4 days.
And if you abstract that to dollars spent in a movie theater, that's like $150 million. That's a blockbuster success. You know, enough so that they have already greenlit a sequel. And
yeah.
Good for them.
You know what? The problem with this movie, and I hope you guys do watch it because there's nuggets of goodness here, is that it just has the fingerprints of like 15, 20 different people on it. You can feel...
That's bad.
Yeah, that's the bad part. And I think that's...
That's The Last Jedi.
No, but I think that's a learnable issue. That's a correctable issue for a sequel.
Okay. I don't know. When I turn on Netflix this past week and, you know, I'm going to watch one thing, I watched this new documentary, The Toys That Made Us.
Let's talk about The Toys,
my
toys
goodness.
That Made Us.
Did you watch that?
Yes, I did.
Okay. That's all I know about the
It was one of my favorite things I've seen on Netflix.
Yeah.
In this last year.
I only watched the first one.
So this is a...
I skipped that one.
An 8-part documentary series paid for and produced by Netflix, so high production values. And it's always the fear you have with these genre-specific documentaries is that they, if they're especially a genre that you are passionate about, if they don't go deep enough. Like, okay, if they're going to spend all this money and this is going to be the quote-unquote canonical documentary about 80s toys, if they don't nail it, you're not going to see one for a while and they miss the mark. What a wasted opportunity. I don't think, like, all the fears are assuaged here.
You said it's an 8-part? I thought it was only 4.
So they've only released 4 so far. It's
what are the other Star 4
Wars.
Toys?
Oh, we'll get to them. Star Wars. And I think you should watch them in order because even though you may not be interested in a Barbie or G.I. Joe, there are a lot of shared interviews and recurring characters, you know, like CEOs of Mattel and product designers. And
when you say Star Wars, it's really about Kenner.
Yeah, so the Star Wars story is about Kenner, but it dives into Hasbro and Mattel and how they turned down the license for Star Wars. But they have unprecedented access, at least access I had not seen in video form before, outside of a lot of the making of books, of the early drawings of the prototypes. They revisit like the spaces. They do these fun little reenactments at the beginning of every episode of like the business meetings that make these toys, because these are businesses. They approach them not just from like the fan hobby collecting perspective, but like the how the sausage was made, how the plastic was ground down, and
why they decided on that scale.
Why they decided on
that at the time everybody was doing large guys, like a foot tall, you know, like Barbie and Ken.
Right, right.
But even the original G.I. Joes were that tall.
Right, exactly. Yeah. But they went small so that they could make ships, you know, because they didn't just want to make the characters. They wanted to give them vehicles.
And then it was one of their CEOs that just said, held his two fingers out, his two sausage fingers out, and said, they're going to be this big. And they took a ruler out and measured it, and it was at 3.5 inches. They interview some familiar characters that people in the Star Wars and toy collecting industry. Your friend, the guy who runs Super 7, Brian Flynn, he's a big part of the series.
He is?
Yeah.
He's not in Star Wars.
He's not in Star Wars. He's in Masters of the Universe.
Oh, cool.
Super 7 there. Steve Sansweet, big collector. He's in the Star Wars episode. So the first 4 episodes, Star Wars, Barbie, G.I. Joe and Masters of the Universe, which I think Masters of the Universe is my favorite one.
Oh, I haven't watched
that one. Is by far my favorite.
Super 7 just did their remaster of those,
that, which is why it's in that series. But you have these personalities of like the people who made the toys, who designed the toys, who drew the toys. They talk about how they kitbashed these toys together. Yeah. They found like they went to store shelves and for their board meeting to launch the new product, they would like slap some silly putty on this toy and swap a head out and say, that's our action figure.
I think in the G.I. Joe one, they just started putting the faces of some of the employees onto the G.I. Joe.
Yes, they did.
Because they're running out of people.
Because they did a hundred of them.
Do you know the most elusive, sought-after Star Wars character? Action figure?
Oh, because you hadn't watched the episode yet.
No, I didn't watch it.
Okay, because that is revealed. Oh. And it was never released, but it was prototyped.
What is it, like a Greedo? What is
no,
it?
No. Oh.
Can I say?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's not a big spoiler.
It's a Boba Fett with a shooting rocket from him.
They all rocked the J-Rocket. They never released it because it was promised. It was one of those just like the box that you pre-order. And people who pre-ordered it never got it because some other toy had choking hazard.
That'll do it.
The other 4 toy categories that they do. Do you guys want to know?
Oh yeah, the upcoming one?
Yes. Come on, tell me it's Transformers.
Please tell me it's Transformers.
Transformers is one.
Yes.
Transformers has got to be one. All right.
But you don't know?
No. It is
okay,
one.
Okay.
You want to guess the other 3?
I mean, it's a little out of the genre time period, but I wouldn't mind like a Matchbox Hot Wheels.
No Matchbox.
Yeah, you think
Hot
with
Wheels.
Barbie that would be in there.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's Star Trek. Which I thought was an interesting thing because Star Trek was it was Playmates, and I guess if you're doing Star Wars, you might as well do Star Trek. Lego is one, which I think makes total sense. But I feel like we've seen so many Lego documentaries, so.
But it, you know, old school Lego, maybe they come up with a slightly different take on it. We and usually then, don't see much on the Lego personalities in those documentaries.
The fourth one is the one that's. I get why they did it. It's a little bit of a disappointment to me because I wanted them to do something that was not US-centric. And Lego isn't US-centric, but I wanted them to do
like
something
that was Gundam or something.
Japan, exactly. Mm-hmm. Like Voltron or something. It's Hello Kitty.
Oh.
So it doesn't resonate exactly with me. I'm sure there's going to be some interesting
stories
there.
I'm sure there's
there.
People that are really excited about that. It's just not the
but those are four, and hopefully they'll be able to do more because I think they did a really great job with the storytelling and
they brought out the personality of a lot of the people.
Yeah. It was perfect nostalgia information
like
mix.
The people who aren't like people, they made them interesting, and I think that it was really excellent documentary series.
Yeah, The Toys That Made Us on Netflix.
God, I want that USS flag now. That like 8-foot.
What are you talking about? Lego?
No, it's an 8-foot G.I. Joe aircraft carrier. It was the biggest they ever built for G.I. Joe.
And it was one of those things like
I just saw
because
that
because they just. Like, they had the money. They're like, you couldn't make the tooling to make that net today. I mean, custom toys are expensive today. But, you know, I guess the closest you can get to toys, I'm sorry to stretch this out, but the closest you get to those kind of toys sitting for today's kids are like Skylanders and Disney Infinity. And even those.
Those went under.
Went under because digital is where the kids are at.
Well, they tried to combine them with those.
And that's where they found some success. But kids are buying apps, and it's zero manufacturing cost, basically.
Yeah.
Having tangible toys, I'm afraid, are things that are going to go away, at least in this, you know, at this scale.
Yeah.
Yeah, it sucks.
I don't know. 3D printers.
Yeah.
Print your own toys.
Yeah. Or if you're into cards, baseball cards were a big thing, and trading cards were a big thing in the 80s and 90s, you can print your own. Did you guys ever play CCGs?
You mean like Magic?
Yes.
Sure. Yeah,
customizable card games.
I'd never played Magic, but I did play Star Trek The Next Generation for about 3 weeks in college.
Oh, you did?
In college.
Ah.
Yeah.
Well, this story may resonate with you. Star Trek Next Generation, which was, I believe, CCG, Wizards of the Coast, I believe, made that. They made Magic the Gathering. I'm not exactly sure if it was the same company. But it's long been out of publishing, like they've publication.
Wait, this is that game I played?
This is that game you played.
Oh, my God.
It's now kind of open sourced.
What do you mean? How do you do an open source card game?
Well, because they stopped publishing expansion packs 10 years ago. In December, but some fans have kept it alive, and if you go to the website of the continuing committee, it's trekcc.org, you can get, they're releasing new cards themselves, and you can download your whole set, print them out, put them in sleeves, and still play the game.
So, but they're free.
They're free.
So you download the whole set, and then you just play with.
Yeah, because it's how you make your deck.
Level playing field.
Yeah.
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 That's cool. That's a real twist on the way that the whole thing was made.
I mean, loot packs.
Exactly. The whole thing is based on loot packs and chance and basically addiction.
Right, right. It was one of the appeals. But there was, I think that's the testament of the design of these games, these tabletop games. Like, there was a Star Wars one, there's a Star Trek one. The way they designed them really adhered, I think, well to the mythology of the universe they were set in.
Yeah.
You know, you set out your game board was a series of planets, of systems, and then you had your own ships. You got crew, and there was combat, there was exploration. And it was really, you know, where the D&D was the 80s. For the 90s, I feel like this was D&D of the Magic, and games like that were D&D of the 90s. So it was a thing I played, and I'm glad it lives on.
Yeah, I'm kind of down on him right now because my son's totally addicted to him.
To loot boxes?
To Magic.
Oh, yeah, still?
All he wanted for Christmas was Magic cards, and he got them, and then he wanted to go buy more the day after Christmas.
Do you want us to come over and scare him off it? You know, I mean, I can show him some of my original posts on the internet.
I would
like the late 90s.
Is there a
about my hunt?
What's
hunt
a cautionary
for,
video?
Yeah,
I would love to see you try.
What is the red asphalt for magic addiction?
What is that? What are you talking about?
It's like, you know, the driving video when you take driving lessons, red asphalt. Oh. Right? What is the cautionary video for Magic the Gathering playing
the Reefer Madness of magic.
Yes, right?
Oh, yes, please.
Yeah.
That's a great idea.
Too much mana. Or not enough mana. Mana addiction. I don't know. Is he good at the game?
Well, yeah, but he also has bought a lot of cards. Like, that's part of it.
Maybe
yeah.
that's what we do. We just go over and card stomp him like a bunch.
Beat him into submission. I got an interesting text from you over the holiday break for something your kid wanted to do. You had a parenting question. I don't know if it's a story you want to share, though.
I'm just wondering, how much, when it comes to kids' savings.
Yes.
How much power should they have over what they spend it on?
You mean purchasing power?
Yeah, and there's many thoughts on this, and there's the idea that the kids should be able to do whatever they want. It's their own money. They should be able to make their own mistakes if they want to.
Absolutely.
But there was some disagreement in my household about whether or not an expensive, like $200 lightsaber should be something that a 10-year-old should be allowed to buy.
A big purchase. I mean, relative scale, that's like a kid buying a car.
Yeah,
at that age.
Exactly.
No, right?
Exactly. You can't take out a loan to buy a lightsaber.
Yeah. My thought was, I think you don't let the kids spend that money.
Yeah.
It's a slippery slope.
Compared to magic, that's where I'm coming at it from. So I was for the lightsaber. However, not everyone in my household was in total agreement. And you weighed in, and my counterpart, my wife, appreciated your input.
I'm sorry to not validate your decision.
I think you're the voice of reason.
I mean, how did you win, Norm? Did you show him like $800 lightsabers, and you're like, you should save up for this?
No, when I got this message from you, I'm like, one, I don't have kids. So I'm like, Jeremy, I'm the last person to give you any type of parenting advice.
This would be perfect for a bunch of dads, but the podcast doesn't exist anymore.
Yeah, yeah, and so I thought I approached it as more of like you're asking me less from the parental perspective, but more about the utility, the value of could anyone, let alone a 10-year-old, appreciate a $200 Star Wars toy for what that costs.
Yeah.
And I felt a 10-year-old would not appreciate it for its relative value for his how much spending power he currently has.
Well, it will be a test. We can test this theory because he has gone and purchased the lightsaber.
No! Yes. Wow! He's gone against his mother's wishes and his father's friend's wishes.
the dude is going to be, he's going to be a CEO one day because he is the most persistent person I've ever met.
Wow.
Day after day, he campaigned to buy this lightsaber. Finally gave in.
I'm going to go out here on a limb and say, this kid sounds pretty cool. He's into magic, expensive lightsabers. Maybe we should have him on the podcast.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad he's spending on that and other, not other things. But
yes.
Oh, good luck. Good luck. And I'd love to check out that lightsaber. Ask him if I could borrow it for a day and check it out.
We'll do.
Something else that popped up over the weekend, over this past week, I think it dropped on December 29th, is the new season of Black Mirror. And there is actually a parenting episode in this season, Jeremy. So
a whole episode?
A whole episode about the limits of the extreme uses of technology. And I know a lot of people think that Black Mirror is a little glib. It's, it's what if cell phones but too much? And
it can be a little too social commentary for its own good.
The whole show is social commentary, but I appreciate it for its Twilight Zone world building, right? The first episode in this new season is called the USS Callister. And I think if you are new to Black Mirror, but you're in a science fiction, this is a great place to jump in.
You don't have to watch season one.
You don't have to watch season one, two, or three. This is fourth season, technically.
Is it the fourth already?
Well, two seasons were three-episode seasons in UK. And then this is the second Netflix-funded season.
Okay.
And there are some great episodes, fantastic episodes from the past couple seasons. But USS Callister, I think, sets a really great bar for what it does. It's a... I don't know if we should discuss it or spoil the premise. If you've seen, they released some trailers for these episodes. USS Callister, I will say, it is about a woman who wakes up and she's aboard a very clear parody of 1966 original series Star Trek, with the over the top captain and a crew and the uniforms, and it's shot and lit like the original series. And she finds herself in that world.
Yeah, I don't think we need to spoil it beyond that. But I will say, what I was really impressed with is that there's a little bit of cycling between two different places in this episode. And the cinematography is dramatically different to emphasize that. I thought artistically this was a really good episode. But what, moreover, what impresses me is, like, there's enough here for something more than a standalone episode.
It feels like a pilot to a really interesting science fiction series, which I don't know will ever come because they're trying to tell this singular cautionary tale story, a very Twilight Zone type story. But all the acting is great. The performances of the lead who plays the Captain Kirk-like character. What's his name of his the actor? He was from Breaking Bread. Jesse Plemons.
Oh,
Jesse Plemons.
He does all those advertisements now.
Mm-hmm. Does he? Oh.
Yeah.
he was in a Fargo season two. He's excellent in this character.
The mother from How I Met Your Mother is one of the main characters. One of the McPoyle twins from It's Always Sunny.
William from Westworld.
Yes. You can go with yours. I'll go with mine.
Do you find that the episodes are hit and miss?
Yeah. There are some that are just like really tough to watch because they're all dark. Hmm. Like these are all like,
that's how Twilight Zone
exactly.
was.
Oh, there's the occasional, you know what you're getting into and that they're all kind of dystopian. Like they're not uplifting stories. Mm. Technology is
sometimes Twilight Zone wasn't uplifting, you know, once in
a
while.
But it was disturbing before it was uplifting. Yeah. And like the technology here and the way it's used is meant to disturb you. So some of it is a little hard to watch. And they're powerful performances. Jodie Foster directed an episode which I thought was fantastic.
Was she in it?
No. Hmm. No. And they always get like it's an anthology series, so they're able to get some pretty good actors starring in this.
Commenters, tell us what you think of this USS Callister episode.
Next up in pop culture, a lot of pop culture this week. Star Wars has crossed $4 billion in this franchise, a big milestone.
What'd they pay for it?
$4 billion.
A break even.
Yeah, yeah. Not all of it.
Just
profit.
Write it off now.
Yes, right. And then really one last thing. The t-shirt you're wearing, Kishore, we're doing some little bit of Thanos talk.
Yeah, so first of all, I know it's Thanos. I'm going to keep calling it Thanos. I don't care what people say to me. Mm-hmm. It's the way I want to pronounce it, so that's how
be
it's
you,
gonna
man.
Be
you, man. Be you.
A couple weeks ago, I was so excited to talk about this. Not excited, I'm devastated by it. Jim Starlin, who wrote Infinity Gauntlet, has left Marvel after a number of years, citing a creative difference. He has a new set of books coming out on Thanos later this summer. And unfortunately, he felt like his plot was ripped off for the ongoing series. And so he got real mad and Marvel cut him loose, which is just unbelievable to me.
Will you follow him?
I don't know. It depends on where he goes and what character he picks up. I like Jim's work a lot. I think he wrote the most iconic stuff about Thanos. And then there's an ongoing series, and Thanos' birth name was revealed, and I hate it.
I knew mythology. He wasn't born named Thanos.
Garbage.
And we'll leave it at that. All right, let's jump to tech news.
Oh, really? Already? All right. Let's do that.
Perhaps the biggest piece of technology news that happened over the holiday break is Apple making a concession.
Mm.
Concession. Humble Apple. Is this new Apple for 2018? Humble Apple?
I don't know.
They've
been humble before. Mm. Remember AntennaGate?
I don't. That was through gritted teeth. And this one also through gritted teeth. Steve Jobs, when he and Tim Cook had to sit in front of that stage and say, "We're going to give you guys cases."
I think Steve Jobs like literally
ripping
said,
it. Fine.
He said, "Fine, we'll give you a case."
He was just not happy with that. Oh, and I could you could get a sense of that with their most recent concession. So, The Verge and a bunch of news outlets had reported and got admission from Apple ahead of this concession that they had been throttling CPU speeds, clock speeds on their SoCs. After the latest update, iOS 11,
based on the battery power.
Yes,
this affected older phones because they have weaker batteries now,
weaker capacities, and couldn't stay at high voltages for longer.
Right.
So you need to have a higher voltage to maintain the high clock speed, but that really kills these kind of batteries. So instead, they'd want to stretch out batteries that maybe after 500 charge cycles, you know, when you're diminished to 80% your original capacity, run at lower voltage, lower clock speed.
I think it's
slower performance.
It's an important distinction because I think a lot of casual readers saw this as Apple slows down older phones on purpose. But it's actually about the battery. That's an important distinction. It's not like if you have an iPhone 6, we're going to turn you down so that you upgrade.
Right. And it goes fundamentally into the design of these phones. It's back to the age-old discussion of, like, why can't batteries just be user-replace? Because then this wouldn't be a problem. But yes. That's not the direction that, for better or worse, phone manufacturers have moved in.
Worse.
How
is there a better part of that?
Well, better part in that now you... A lot of these phones are smaller because they don't have replaceable batteries, and you can use interesting battery configurations.
I'm going to quote...
We're not going to go into this debate again.
Well, I'll just say, I'll quote a dear friend of the podcast, making this phone any thinner won't make me buy it any faster. Mm. That's close to what Jeremy said.
He bought it anyway. So Apple issued a press release explaining this, being transparent when they thought they previously did not need to be transparent, and it kind of blew up in their face, and explained the scenario, and they're going to do two things to address it. One is that they're going to issue a software patch, which we don't know how, but will give more transparency into the health of your battery on your phone.
But it won't speed up your phone.
No, it won't speed up your phone. It'll tell you if your phones should be replaced.
Yeah.
And a lot of people had problems with the issue because when... They claim anecdotally when they went to Genius Bars, for example, Apple stores, and complained about the reduced speed, they weren't told that the battery needed to be replaced. They were told to buy a new phone.
Right.
And that, I think, is bad mojo. Like,
that's shady.
Yeah, that's real shady. And there are class action lawsuits that are popping up because of this. So they're saying the software will help you address that, make you more aware about the health of your battery life. Because batteries should be considered a consumable now. You're not just paying $800 or $1,000 or even $1,200 for a new phone every other year, every 3 years. You also have to buy new batteries, which is something that we used to think about all the time with consumer electronics, but we don't really think about now because batteries are rechargeable. So they've lowered the cost of replacing your battery on an iPhone 6 or newer through the end of 2018, starting January 1st, to $30 $80.
That's pretty good.
That is a
that's cheaper
steal.
Than what you can do in third market.
I have 6S, the old 6S phone. I'm taking that in and getting that battery replaced immediately, and I might get it replaced again at the end of 2018. And it means that, like, if you bought an iPhone 10 at the end of 2018, spend that $30 and get a new battery.
Yeah, maybe so.
Right?
Maybe so.
You get a fresh battery, fresh charge cycles. You're going to charge it more than 300 times if you charge it once a day, right? And you're going to probably not, you're going to be at 80, 90% battery health. If it's consumable, I mean, $30 for a $1,000 phone, that's a small price to pay. But going forward, that's going to go up to $80. So it's just something to take into consideration again.
Personally, I would like to see a toggle in the settings menu that allows me to up it to full, you know, full performance. No, not overclock. Just use my battery, even if it's going to only give me 4 hours a day or 3 hours a day. Like, leave that up to me. I want full power from the operating system. I don't want choppiness and all this degradation if I understand the consequences.
Of overheating or...
That's not overheating. It's just going to kill the battery.
It's going to kill the battery faster. Yeah. I don't think Apple will ever do it.
That's what I want.
No way.
All right.
No way.
Then...
If you have an iPhone and you're going to the Apple Store, there are some mixed reports about which of the phones the technicians will service and replace the batteries for. Mm. Let us know your experiences. I'd love to hear them. If you have a phone you bought 1 year ago, the iPhone 7, and you're going in to get your battery replaced now, 1 year later, and you're facing resistance, we'd love to hear that too, because, yeah, I'm curious how they can support it. I mean, it's just a whole... We'll have to consider this for cars too.
Yeah.
Batteries are consumables and they're expensive. We'll have to replace the batteries after, you know, 5-10 years of using these cars. Yeah. Anyway, more Apple news. I don't know. Is this interesting? The code for the Lisa is going to be released.
This is interesting. I mean, it's not useful. It's not like It's not like anybody owned one.
Yeah, right, right.
So it's not even
what,
that
What do you think
nostalgic.
People will be doing with this?
I think that they'll be, you know, just as, well, what's cool is that they thought they'd lost it. And so they've tracked it down. They've ported it over to Unix. And they're putting it up open source. So, source code for the Lisa operating system will be released for free in 2018. This is the computer that Apple was working alongside the Macintosh. Steve Jobs was over in his pirate building making the Mac, and the home base was making Lisa. And it's basically, Mac took a lot of its DNA from Lisa. So it's just part of, you know,
I don't think there's any usefulness. It's just cool.
It is cool. I mean, just to be able to use it.
Good piece of computer history.
Yeah.
Yeah. CES is coming up next week. We are not going to CES this year.
You say that with hesitancy because every time you come back from CES, you're like, why did I go to CES? Like, there's some aspect of regret.
I mean, there's regret because it's one, it's Vegas, and two, because it has been unexciting for a lot of years. We still used to go because a lot of the companies that we do want to chat with are there. Not just TV makers, but, you know, VR headset makers, interesting peripherals, robotics makers. This year, I don't believe Oculus is there, so we're not really going to go. We have actually other travel plans.
And you bought a TV. So you
and don't... I don't even need the TV. And I don't want to stand in front of that LG 8K 88-inch TV. But that's the big news. Ahead of CES, we're getting these leaks. But LG will have an 88-inch 8K TV.
Like one? Is this like a $10,000?
$10,000?
This is a unicorn.
You couldn't get a 4K LG 88-inch TV for $10,000.
Really?
This is like a $50,000 thing.
No.
Yeah.
Oh, this is a unicorn TV.
This
they're
is
just
not,
doing
Yeah, this
for...
is purely a show of strength. It's not a product that that they're going to sell, that I don't think anyone's going to buy. LG, let me to be clear, it's their 77-inch TV is $20,000. So
4K?
This is
4K. Oh my God!
Yeah. Now we do you remember? Jeez. Will and I saw an 8K sharp LCD years ago, and actually at New York Comic Con this year, we saw there was a sharp 8K display that looked great. There's just no content. Now Japan has they've promised they have some broadcasts that they're filming in 8K, and they're I think one of the future Olympics they're hoping to film in 8K. 4K. We're just getting people buying 4K TVs. 4K TVs are finally getting really affordable, under $800. You can get a decent 4K TV. But this is just pushing the envelope. They can make the panels. Why not?
Do you think that there's any justification for 8K, really? Like,
I didn't think there was justification for 4K. Smaller than...
like 65 inches.
I think for projectors, makes a lot of sense.
Oh, smaller than 65? I don't think so.
Yeah. I don't know. We
commercial
just,
applications, but greater than 65 for sure.
My family just watched The Princess Bride last night in 65 inches of 4K HDR on my 2-year-old
Sony.
On
Apple TV.
Yeah, on Apple TV.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And it's
I
just like, it's just absolutely gorgeous.
Yes.
I mean, just the picture just blew my mind. I felt like I was watching film. It's like the blacks are black. The whites are like bright as hell.
Well, Dell had a 32-inch 8K computer monitor.
Yeah.
So, yes, there will be a market. That's already out. People can buy that. There was a CES last year. So an 8K 88-inch or 8K 65-inch, there's going to be some market for it. For vast majority of people, I think you could have said the same thing about, you know, 2K to 4K, and there is a big difference in 4K. And I think HDR, you're right, HDR is the big difference, the luminance. And OLED is world-changing.
Yeah. I wish I had it.
TVs haven't been where CES has been going for the past couple of years. I mean, all of this aside, all this TV talk aside, is there anything that you are excited about or you feel like it is going to be showcased at CES this year?
Car stuff. I think increasingly car stuff is going to be exciting. You know, your Audis are going to be there and they'll be showing interesting UIs for their next generation of electric cars. I always like the peripherals area, the headphones, you know, putting on some really, really nice multi-$1,000 headphones with really great amps. It's high-end consumer electronics.
There are rumors that Google is going to have a really big presence this year, which is unusual for them. And I'm wondering if they're going to be doing a lot in voice this year because of that. They seem to, at the end of last year, make a lot of noise with all of the Google Home, the Google, you know, Mini, all of those speakers coming out. I'm wondering if they're going to debut some new technology there. But that's largely just playing catch up.
Yeah.
And then I'm wondering if there's going to be a pivot away from VR to more AR stuff, AR, MR stuff.
I don't think we see that at CES. I think the companies that are making those are so big that they're going to run their own events and not have to share the spotlight with anyone. Yeah. A couple more things. Roku has announced the Roku Connect platform,
which is essentially what a stripped down version of Alexa or Siri. So they have universal voice search. It apparently will connect to, you know, different sound bars and stuff. So it'll be for entertainment, but it's going to stop at entertainment. It's not going to connect to everything else throughout your home.
Is it a voice activated box?
Yeah.
Oh.
But I think that's I think there's a limitation if it's just going to do entertainment.
And going back to Google, either of you use Pixelbooks?
Oh, I do not, because the Pixelbooks have been good.
Yeah.
They use them at my son's school.
Oh, Chromebooks, education, right? Yeah. Perfect. Mm-hmm. Chromebooks are perfect for education. Well, there's a new OS for the Pixelbook called Fuchsia.
It's one of these experimental OSs. Like, do you guys remember Andromeda from years ago? This idea of building a whole new OS instead of being built on Linux, it's built on one of Google's own microkernels. I think it's called Zircon. And we don't know what it's for. It's like really mysterious still. But the fact that it can be loaded on a Pixelbook opens up all sorts of questions. Like, is this going to eventually replace Chrome OS or replace the idea of what Android looks like on Chrome OS? I think there's a lot of potential for it. There's some leaks on what it looks like from a few months ago. And it has much more of a card-based interface where you can sort of resize all sorts of things, which screams to me more tablet than phone. Mm.
Interesting.
So I think that could be interesting on Pixelbook, but who knows? Like Google's whole history is like, we're going to experiment on this and then kill it off. So I don't know if we're going to ever see something, but I think 6 months ago we talked about, was it time for Android to get blown up and be rebuilt from the ground up? Maybe that. I doubt that this is that. I bet you it's more of like an Internet of Things kind of play, but, you know, interesting to keep an eye on.
You know, speaking of card-based interfaces, it was the Palm Pre that really kicked those off on modern-day smartphones, and I would say on iOS 11, on the iPhone X, that's the most card-like interface so far for iOS.
Hmm.
Like the way they do the multitasking and sliding from screen to screen.
Mm-hmm.
I find that's really intuitive. I thought this was an interesting story. Kotaku has a video clip from a 2016 pitch for a Star Wars space shooter.
Okay.
The Double Damage is the development team who made this, and they made a Rebel Galaxy. And they put together this video in 2 weeks and pitched it to EA. It didn't get picked up, but it gives you a little bit of idea of what they were hoping for in putting together a X-Wing versus TIE Fighter-like, a modern version of X-Wing versus TIE Fighter.
In VR, and I'm on board.
Not in VR.
Yeah, well.
Yeah. Yeah.
Make it so.
That would be easy to patch.
Yes.
And for now, you have Elite
somebody,
Dangerous.
Is somebody modding Elite Dangerous just to have, like, TIE Fighters flying around?
They did it. They did it with... They did a little VR mission for, what was it?
Battlefront.
Yeah, the original Battlefront.
Yeah.
Where you flew an X-Wing, I think, or some sort of Star Wars ship.
Yeah.
It was great. Yeah. I want more of that.
Want more?
I want actual combat, lots of it.
And then some interesting Nintendo news. I know you're enjoying Super Mario Odyssey, but if you have a Game Boy, you could play Super Mario Land 2.
Yeah, you need like a cartridge. Like a burnable cartridge, too.
Yeah. In color.
That's super cool. This came out of nowhere. I don't know. I actually never had a Game Boy. It was one of the, did you?
Yeah. I had three of them. I had Game Boy, Game Boy Color.
No. I jumped on it like the DS or what was it? Like the SP.
Advance.
I jumped on it Advance. But yeah, the Game Boy Color was the first color Game Boy. But the Super Mario Land was never colorized. This team colorized their own freaking Game Boy ROM.
No.
And now it runs, and it looks great. I mean, the colors that they chose could have come straight out of...
Oh, that does look good.
Yeah, straight out of Nintendo. They did an excellent job.
Hey, you guys would be proud of me. I finally bought my first Nintendo product ever.
You bought a Switch?
Over Christmas, we got an original Wii.
What?
My kid went over for a play date to some kid's house, yeah. and they were playing Wii Sports, and he's like, I love this. I'm like, yeah, I'll get you a Wii.
Dude, I would have given you a Wii. I have one in my wicker box.
He is so
the
excited.
The wicker box of sad, discarded technology.
He is so excited about the Wii, and he plays it every day.
That's great.
He's thrilled
How
about
that?
The Wii.
What's he playing?
He's mostly playing just Wii Sports, but we have, like, and,
like everyone
like,
else.
Sports yeah. Resort and everything else. But I think it's hilarious that he's like 8 years behind the curve on video games. I'll try to keep him there.
Oh, that's great.
It's so much more affordable.
I love that it still has the magic. Because the Wii was good.
At 480i.
I have a component adapter going into my TV.
Fancy, 480p. Very nice. One last thing that in technology that borders onto our next segment. Did either of you watch or see the Falcon Heavy?
Falcon Heavy is one of the most exciting science stories of 2018. And SpaceX keeps teasing, like they put out trailers. I don't know why you put out trailers for rocket launches, but SpaceX is doing it. And we see it on a pad in Florida.
It looks good.
Wait, that's real? That's not CG?
That is not CG. That is it there.
Man.
I mean, that's not the, like, the. They still have a long way to go before the launch, but we're, like, that is the actual rocket there. It will be the most powerful rocket ever launched from this planet.
Is that going to get us to Mars?
The idea is that it's going to be, yes. I mean, it's not the rocket to get us to Mars. There are stages, but this is one of the crucial steps.
And right before Christmas, they did their own launch in Southern California.
Oh, yeah. That generated a little bit of interesting nighttime viewing for the audience down there.
From Vandenberg. Yeah.
Did you see videos of this?
Yeah, I did. But I think there was also in that same week, there was the government declassified like UFO footage.
Oh, conspiracy theorist.
Yes. I mean, yeah.
Unrelated. Unrelated.
They were there already, but then a lot of people thought, like, disassociated, like, UFOs were in the air. So people who saw this without knowing that it was a Falcon launch, thought it was a UFO.
Yeah, I think that's not, you know, a lot of people, like, on Twitter just made fun of people thinking it was a UFO. Like, I don't think everyday people keep track of rocket launches.
They used to. In the 60s.
Like, a weird object like that in the sky, which looks like a giant jellyfish in the sky.
In time-lapse.
I would think it was looks UFO, super cool. too.
Yeah.
Also, SpaceX launching something right now with a mysterious payload because it's for the government and it's classified.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah, so well, there's a lot of SpaceX-related fun stuff going on.
All right. Before we move into our next segment, I want to thank the sponsor of this week's episode, and that support comes from Squarespace. If you're ready to start your new business, why wait too long before you set your plans in action? The future is coming, so make it brighter with Squarespace. With beautiful templates created by world-class designers, Squarespace makes it easy to turn your idea into a new and unique website. You can showcase your work, blog, publish content, sell products and services of all kinds in just a few clicks. Everything is customizable, and it works for mobile perfectly, as well as your desktop, of course. And you can use Squarespace Analytics to help you grow in real time. Nothing to ever install, patch, or upgrade ever. And though if you have a question, you can always call their reach, get in touch with their 27 award-winning 24/7 customer support, and they're there to help. A dream is just a great idea that doesn't have a website yet, so make it a reality with Squarespace. Head over to squarespace.com for a free trial, and when you're ready to launch, use the offer code TEST to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain. That's squarespace.com, offer code TEST. And the other sponsor of this week's episode support comes from the podcast The Art of Charm. It's an iTunes top 50 podcast that's packed with wisdom and the true sense of the world. From how to become more productive and professional to how to read body language, network, and negotiate, the show basically covers anything that will help you become a high performer at home and at work. And you can go to theartofcharm.com/podcast or search The Art of Charm on iTunes or wherever you listen to podcasts and start taking your life to the next level. And thank them for supporting this week's episode.
time for a moment of science. So for the listeners of this show, almost after every podcast, we go out and get some food somewhere. And Jeremy, how about we go over to Rainbow Grocery? It's a local grocery store mm-hmm. that's around here. It's sort of renowned for being organic, having a lot of specialized local products. And the hottest product at Rainbow Grocery right now is water, called Live Water.
What? Is this for real? Because these guys usually know what they're doing.
Yeah, this is sadly for real. Live Water is a start, it's almost like a tech startup. It's a company that sources water from this particular spring, totally unfiltered, delivered right to your door. It has unique probiotics in it that only exist from this spring. It has an expiration date on the water, so you know you have to drink it before it loses its energetic potential. Are you interested in going to Rainbow Grocery?
I'm just not, because sure.
You should poison their supply with some antibacterial pills.
I think it's already kind of poisoned with other bacteria culture. So
what is the cost of a bottle of Live Water?
I believe it's pretty expensive. I don't recall. I actually like this. So this has made the rounds because of a New York Times story that highlighted this movement of unfiltered water selling at a premium. It's usually like double what bottled water already runs, which is already kind of a scam because bottled water is often municipal water that's just sort of treated and filtered. Tap water in almost every location, particularly here in the U.S., is 100% safe.
Our tap water is spring water.
It's great because it comes from the Hetch Hetchy Reservoir outside of Yosemite. In this case, this unfiltered stuff poses some interesting health risks, most likely Giardia, which is this protozoan. Can I interest you in some severe abdominal pain and distress? That's Giardia. And really, there's only a couple ways to take care of Giardia. It's to physically filter it out or use like certain additives like chloramine or chlorine to kill it off. Even then, chlorine's not super effective against Giardia. It's usually physical filtration that takes it out. But in any case, this raw water is sort of built on this idea that treatment of water, that additives that are happening make water bad. They're adding chemicals to it. They're feeding on paranoia. And I'm so interested in meeting the people that are buying this and actually talking with them about what makes it so special. I think it's just a scarcity play. One of the investors in Live Water is this VC entrepreneur. His name's Doug Evans. He had one other product that came out in 2017. It was called the Juicero.
No.
Think about that.
Wah, wah, wah.
At the end of the day, this is about money and bilking people for money. And it's unfortunate, but it exists out there. I think like any fad, it'll go away pretty quickly because it's expensive. But I think there's capitalizing on a scarcity play right now. On to more interesting stories?
Yes. Yep.
Because uplifting story time. We did something right in science. The U.S. did something right.
All right.
Off the West Coast, killer whales have been endangered, and we've seen their populations decline. Up near Puget Sound, near Vancouver and Seattle, we saw numbers go into the high dozens, like literally down to 77 killer whales spotted off the coast just last year. NOAA, which is the National Ocean Administration, enacted regulations that ships can't come within 200 yards of whales, of killer whales now, because the noise from the ships, for whatever reason, we don't understand this well, once they come close to the whales, they seem to get stressed out and eat less. And so they basically banned this and like, we'll just take a precautionary measure and see how it works. They enacted that regulation a few years ago. The population has rebounded.
Great.
In recent years. You can't make 100% correlation to this one particular regulation, but it seems like there's strong evidence that this regulation made a big difference.
You've just adopted the cadence of Neil deGrasse Tyson. Do you realize that?
Sure. Cadence?
You did.
So when you kick a football, it gets deflected by the Earth's gravity. It moves over.
No. That's great. We've saved the whales.
We're starting to save the whales. Don't take your ship close to whales.
Smart.
Sugar coma? food coma. It's real things.
I saw
wow.
that.
Wow. All right. Before you think it's real, here's what the actual study was. A group in New Zealand studied 49 individuals and gave, it was a double blind study where they gave a bunch of people sugar sweetened drinks, usually that have sucrose in it. Sucrose is metabolized in your body into fructose, which can't pass the blood brain barrier. It's different than glucose and other sugars that come usually in a more natural food supply. And sorry, I used the word natural there. But what they found was, is they did cognitive tests on these people in this study, and they found people that had the sugar sweetened drinks after a sort of rest period had a 200 millisecond on average lower reaction time, lower performance on cognitive tests than people that didn't have them, indicating that this idea of a sugar coma could be real. Mm-hmm. Before we get anywhere, 49 people is not much of a study. 200 milliseconds is not much of a time difference. Actually, that's a pretty big performance difference in some of these tests, but it's like in the overall, like, you know, real world view of things, it's not a big difference. But it's sort of an interesting finding that suggests that more studies should be undertaken about this.
200 milliseconds is about the difference between a dial-up and DSL Quake connection.
That's life and death in video games. It's 200 milliseconds.
Absolutely.
Right?
Yeah.
That's my problem. It's all the Diet Coke that I've been ingesting. That's why I'm bad at video games. And then a RIP this week to Ben Barris. Ben Barris was a longtime researcher at Stanford who studied glial cells. Glial cells are cells in your brain. They're about 1-to-1 in terms of how many glial cells are versus neurons. And for a long time, people didn't think glial cells did anything. Ben was one of those early researchers that studied glial cells and showed that they had a pretty big pronounced effect in terms of regulating how synapses work. And actually, a certain type of glial cell, astrocytes, actually degrading and destroying synapses. And that destruction of synaptic function might suggest that glial cells have a role in neurodegenerative diseases like Alzheimer's and Parkinson's. Ben was also one of the first prominent transgender scientists in this country. He was also just incredibly, I've met Ben a couple times, renowned for his ability to mentor students and stand up for them, especially speaking to the role that women and minorities in science can play. Ben had pancreatic cancer, and he passed away pretty quickly. But as the story goes, he spent his final days when he was undergoing final treatment writing rec letters for his students. And that, I think, speaks to the kind of scientist Ben Barris was. He'll be missed.
The VR Minute. Virtual reality this week.
All right. Do you hear about this IKEA thing?
Oh.
IKEA is so into VR.
Yeah.
That they gave their employees
VR.
Not one, but two VR headsets.
14,000.
Wait, yes. Like cardboard or something?
No, for real.
Wait, like, so what is
it's
for real?
Like, it's glorified cardboard.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So, but they want their employees to be placing objects, because I think, I mean, AR is a big smart plate for IKEA.
They have any furniture store. Yeah.
They have one of the best launch apps on the iPhone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Where you can place their furniture.
They didn't give 14,000 iPhones away.
They didn't.
No. VR. Yeah. Maybe they'll be at CES. Sorry, I just wanted to get that out of the way. There's only one thing I really wanted to talk about in the VR Minute this week, and that was the Danger Zone.
Yeah, we're going to the Danger Zone.
All right, so this was cool. This was, first, there are some really cool things about this. Big screen, we all know big screen, free app where you can get in a movie theater with three of your friends and watch things on the big screen. They did a promotion this past week. It's not still ongoing, right?
No,
it's only
for 2 days. 29th and 30th, yeah.
Where they have this new theater mode, which is more than four people at a time, and you can get together with a group and watch a movie that they stream to you.
Yeah.
So you don't project your screen. You go to at a specific time. You show up like a real movie theater, and you dive in, and you watch, this past week,
Top Gun.
Top Gun 3D.
So on the back end side, this is interesting. Big screen is a peer-to-peer system, right? Peer-to-peer. So when they first launched, it was four people max because you had to get the bandwidth set up so I was going to host and you would join my room and I would be sending upstreaming my desktop, or if you were using desktop then
to everybody,
to everyone. Yeah. So understandably, with varying internet connections and latency, it's a technical challenge to get everyone synced up, not only for video at good bit rates, but also audio. And it's been how they've been running it for a while. Now they've optimized it. So they launched Big Rooms earlier in 2017, which allowed for, they say, dozens of people. And this is the next step for that. Now, this is not exactly P2P, even though the rooms that they had, the theaters had, were started by users. So it wasn't like I could say, I'm in theater 35 watching Top Gun at 9:30 p.m. It was, I create a room. You join my room.
Which is the lobby.
The lobby. And then we all together as a party, kind of like a video game console gaming party, jump into a server where we would then watch Top Gun. And once we're there, no dropping out or jumping back in.
You can only hear the person you're sitting next to.
Yes.
Or
on
I guess
either
the,
side
the
of you.
Two people you're sitting next to. So if you're in there with a group, it's not ideal because you're in there with other people.
You change seats.
You're only sitting. Yeah, but you can't sit next to everybody.
That's right.
And you might be sitting next to someone who's not in your group.
Now, we tried to get this working and synchronize it, and we had some technical hurdles where I was creating rooms and you were creating rooms and we were being kicked out.
We finally got into a theater together, but then 5 minutes later, one of us
dropped.
And like just went into another theater, right, magically.
Yeah, or I dropped and I had static models where it looked like you guys were still there, but you guys weren't moving.
Got it.
And it realized for like 5 minutes.
I got so engrossed in the film, I didn't try to sync back up with Norm. Because I have to say, I've never in big screen seen a movie streamed so well.
And so this is a 1080p movie side by side, and over internet bit rates. Jeremy was so engrossed that I was texting him. I was like, Jeremy, start a new room. He's like, nope, movie's too good. I'm not going to start again from the beginning.
They started
this Iceman character. I want to know what happens to him.
They started in with that danger zone.
And so I started a new room, and I got like a dozen, I got 18 people in the room, and we watched it together.
Well, you got 18 in the lobby?
Yeah. I did big room.
Oh, okay.
There were people who jumped in mid, like, trailers.
Did anyone say, hey, it's Norm from Tested or anything like that?
No.
Yeah. Okay. No. Well, I just stayed with my group, and everyone there finished out the film. Actually, not everyone. Somebody jumped in next to me, thankfully. Uh-huh. Like, thanks a lot. And then he was very talkative. He was like, all right, I just came here for some Danger Zone. Let's hear some Danger Zone. And I swear, they weren't playing the song. 10 minutes later, they started playing it. He was like, oh, yeah, this is what I'm here for. And then the song ended, and he was like, all right, I'm out. And then he left.
But the interesting thing is, like in all the big screen experiences, you can do a second virtual screen. You could have your desktop.
Yeah.
You didn't have to just be watching Top Gun. Yes, you're in a social room with dozens of other people and their avatars. But I could tell some of the people were looking at the movie. Mm-hmm. Some people were looking down to the and looking at their virtual desktops and browsing Reddit or doing other things, while the shared experience was like, oh, it's a good scene. Let's all look up. You know, the song was playing.
Yeah.
And so that was a really interesting, like, large living room, I felt like, as opposed to being a large theater. It's like a really large living room, but people are still on their phones.
Right. Yeah, I can't say enough just how good the stream was. I mean, it was a huge success.
The video quality.
A huge success on their part for the partnership to get a deal with a major studio and stream this movie to, it was several showings. Like, I forget.
So what they did was two nights, and they every half hour, they started a new showing.
Yeah.
So you could
but
stagger.
Throughout the day, right? I mean, it was just
East
nighttime?
Coast, West Coast, nighttime.
It was a lot of showings.
They tried to do it so people would have reasons to jump in rooms together for the shared social experience. And I think the shared social part of it was more ambient. The benefits were more ambient. Like, we weren't engaging. I wasn't, like, everyone weren't doing the wave or anything, right? It was more like, oh, this is cool because there are a dozen other people here all doing the same thing, but you're really still kind of doing your own thing and watching the movie. We weren't popped into a chat room
talking about
the movie.
A little throwback.
And you got to understand, 3D and VR in the movie theater is not like 3D in the movie theater.
The glasses are already on.
That's true. But in a theater, you've got polarized lenses, so there's always going to be a little bit of ghosting. And if you tilt your head, things start to go wrong. Or if it's shutter, it's like, you know, that problem. In VR, it's like each eye is getting its independent image. It's a 3D movie, probably it's the best way to watch a 3D movie. So once we, and the resolution is like just enough right now. I think next, in another 2 years, when the resolution really gets a little ramp up, this is going to be great.
I did it in the Windows Media, the mixed reality headset.
Which is a little bit better
than the Rift. And it was wonderful. Like, the field of view was perfect.
Yeah.
I mean, you could change your seat in that virtual theater.
Oh, that's it. I went to the front row just to see how it felt. Yeah. And it's wow.
I mean, it's big,
the 3D gets really compressed because at that distance, it's almost nothing.
Yeah.
And so the best seat is actually way in the back.
And so I like sitting way in the back and, you know, having the virtual, the avatars of other people kind of doing their thing made it feel less isolating.
Oh, totally. Yeah.
And so I would be happy to, if they were to do this with movies or even Twitch streams or other type of live streams, like jump into a regular viewing session to, you know, watch a basketball game or watch something. And I don't know about paying a subscription. Or doing this for new movies, because it's not, I mean, the 3D is good, but it's not going to be a replacement to going to a movie theater. But it's convenient.
I want to be able to whitelist who I can hear. I want to blacklist everyone and then whitelist my friends and hear all of them.
Right.
Are they going to do it again? Do they see it as a success?
I think that this is part of their business plan. And they, I mean, they have one studio partner, and they play trailers. They were trailers before the movie, so they're making money there somehow.
There was an interview with the CEO. I forget his name.
Sean?
Yeah. And I think he said they wanted to do a movie very frequently.
Yeah.
If maybe not every week, but often.
Right. I think it still needs to... There are some technical issues that they need to fix, but having done this first time, I think people are going to latch on... Or they're going to figure out some of the bugs. I feel like there needs to be something to do after the movie. Like, there needs to be something to... If it's a new movie or if it's like a TV show or something... Like
panel discussion with
something like hang out in the lobby, like, throw everyone in a rec room style thing and let people talk about it. Like, you know, that's, I don't know how else you're going to build community.
I also wouldn't mind being able to walk around. Like, I feel like that's a constraint right now with big screen is that I actually want to move around and feel like I'm in that space.
I was on my couch. I had the laptop next to me, Windows Mixed Reality. So I didn't need cameras or anything. And I had a big, double gulp or big gulp from 7-Eleven, and was drinking my Diet Cherry Coke, and it felt. And I had a bag of popcorn.
Watch the whole film?
I watched the whole film.
Yeah,
yeah.
I forgot how bad that film is.
It's great.
It's also great. It's also great, but it's also really bad.
There is a chat functionality, so you could be chatting. Like it's a scenario where I wanted to have a keyboard because I wanted to type.
Yeah.
While watching the movie and like have the chat room functionality, even if it's not like the voice chat, I wanted the text chat. This is probably going to support Oculus Go.
This would be perfect for
this
Oculus Go.
This is perfect for that type of mobile headset.
Because then
you
can
you
sit, on your,
positional.
Sit on your couch and do this.
Gosh,
be great.
Yeah, I can't wait for Oculus Go because there's so many questions I have about that. How will the App Store work? You know, is it must strictly be the Oculus Store. Can you sideload apps? I want to know.
Can you sideload media? Period.
Yeah, exactly.
Right? Oh, so many questions. Lots of things to look forward to in 2018. I think that does it for us for this week's episode. Do you want to do one last segment?
Sure.
Oh, yeah. Let's do that.
Testing this week. Hey, what have you guys been testing?
Did you guys know Harmonix made a board game?
No. What?
Well, I got it for my family for Christmas, and we have been enjoying it. We've been testing it and enjoying it. It's called Drop Mix, and it's got a Magic the Gathering component where you can buy more card packs, but it's super cool. You Bluetooth connect it to I might have to be an iOS device, but it, you know, an iPhone or an iPad, and you just put that on the side of it. And then you've got these five slots in front of you with all LEDs under each slot. And you have all these cards that it comes with. And every card corresponds to a vocal, bass, lead, or drum track of a particular song. And you throw a card down, and it starts to play that. You can throw any other card down, and it will sync them up, both tempo and key.
So you're mixing instrumentals with cards.
Yeah, yeah, or also vocals. So you can mix, like, you know, Call Me Maybe with, like, Scenario from A Tribe Called Quest, and it all blends. And then you can adjust the tempo, or you can throw down like these rainbow cards, and that will adjust the tempo automatically. Or you can hit the drop mix button, and that will, it does this amazing thing where it, like, it on in time, it will adjust tempo and key, but it will use the tracks that are currently playing to do it, and in a way that it like loops and it's really cool tech.
Should have brought this in.
How does it actually function as a game, though? Is there like some competitive aspect?
You get the impression that like they made this cool thing and then figured out how to make a game out of it. The game, there's two modes. There's versus and there's like co-op party mode, where you are given a certain amount of time to play a particular card, and you have to play the card that's shown. Like, there's different qualities that the cards have of intensity, as well as what type of instrument it is. So you have to play the right kind of card in the right slot, or if it tells you to remove one, remove that, or hit the drop mix button. It's basically like who can play the best card on time, and if you don't, you lose points, and then you try to beat your high school.
So you're being a DJ, teaching your kids to be a DJ.
Dude, I am dead serious. You could DJ a party, given if people liked this type of music, which is largely electronic, pop, some hip-hop. If people like this kind of music, then you could totally DJ a party with one of these. In fact, you could put it out and let anybody come in and throw a card down to change up the song.
It's like 40-ish songs. I mean, it's like your standard harmonics. They have a license of songs. So what are the expansion packs? Are those instrumentals or new songs?
I think that there are more songs. Every song that comes with the game has two cards for that song. So I don't know if the expansions fill out that song. Like, you only get the vocals and the lead guitar, you don't get the drums for a particular song. Maybe you can fill out those songs, I'm not sure.
Love to try it out.
It's super, it's very cool.
You can buy it, it's like $70. You can buy it online or in toy stores. Hasbro makes it. Very cool. Got just new TV.
You're watching a lot of TV. I put together a Bandai Snap together X-Wing with my son.
Nice.
That was a lot of fun. And for viewers, you can see the top half of a Galaxy Quest cosplay that I'm working on. So I sewed together some pants for this. I bought the top just off of eBay. And then I'm going to do some accoutrements for it, because I have a Galaxy Quest screening that I'm doing at the Alamo Drafthouse, and we're talking about the science of it in a few weeks. So trying to finish up a Galaxy Quest cosplay in time. And trying to really just build up the courage to do like the full Alan Rickman like prosthetic.
The one with the hair sticking out. Battle damage.
Oh, yeah. 100% with battle damage.
By Grapthar's hammer, I shall avenge you. All right, that does it for this week. Happy New Year again, everyone. We'll be back next week. I think I might not be around. I might be traveling.
Oh my! Is it next week that starts?
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Well, oh, so then if you guys have suggestions of who you'd like to see here with me and Jeremy, let us know.
Yeah, soon.
Yeah, soon is helpful.
All right, we have an outro this week?
Yes, from Fuggin.
Hi there, I didn't see you.
Tested.
I want to do it with a pig now. Do it with a pig.
Tested.
You say some weird stuff on this podcast.
I don't know, I think it's out of context.
What? That sounded in context.